The following content is provided under a Creative Commons license. Your support will help MIT OpenCourseWare continue to offer high-quality educational resources for free. To make a donation or view additional materials from hundreds of MIT courses, visit MIT OpenCourseWare at ocw.mit.edu.
Some content in this audio is not covered under a Creative Commons license. For more information, see the course materials on the MIT OpenCourseWare website.
All right, so this of course does not actually mean that you have more time for assignment 3. In fact, it eats a little bit more time for assignment 3. Sorry about that, but I think this is a net gain for everyone. With that out of the way, Mia Consalvo, actually a lot of you probably are already familiar. You might have taken any of her classes. She's a visiting lecturer, visiting professor, here at Gambit. Are you doing something spring?
Yes, cheating in ethics and games.
Mm-hmm. So this
Brian
is,
can tell you all about it.
You can take this as the sneak preview.
Yes,
I
this
guess.
Is the taster. Okay. Thanks. Okay. So it sounds like you all have lots of opinions, which will be good. So to get started, and I don't like the term lecture because I don't actually lecture very much. I'm going to start by handing around some online index cards, and I want you to take a few minutes and generate some examples of ethical elements, procedures, episodes, games. The more specific you can be, the better. And I'm actually going to collect these at the end because, as Philip mentioned, I'm teaching this ethics and games class, and I want to bring in more examples and stuff. So this will actually be useful for me. So,
talking about in games.
Yeah. So we were just talking about Fable, but if you could think of a more specific example from it, a level, different choices that you get with characters in certain games. Whatever you can come up with in terms of, are there interesting ethical dilemmas, situations?
Wait, is this within the context of the game, or are we talking about, in a multiplayer game, your conduct towards other players and this kind of thing?
Or when I was in Owen's office, team? Whether or not to steal the cool swag.
You can do within MMOs as well, or, multiplayer game. You can continue to write examples to hand in if you can think of them, but just to get started. Then you can start by giving me an example.
Sure. I have a couple fighting games, obviously. There's always kind of questions and debate about whether something is cheap or viable or should you be allowed to do it. So people who play casually will tend to say, if you do this with this character, that's cheap and you shouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. Whereas the community at large and people who play seriously tend to say, well, if you can do something, if you can do something, you should be allowed to do it. And if you can't overcome it, that's your own fault.
Okay, so violating a community norm?
Yeah,
even if it's allowed in the rules, mm-hmm. but it's against the community norm.
Yeah.
Okay. So using Hildy?
Yeah.
Read a lot about that.
Stuff which is related to griefing, just generally. So let's just go for the one which is one of my favorites. So this is griefing for comic effect, or role-playing griefing, but doing it in a way which you are then going to write a blog about, and from your character's perspective, the griefing makes sense. So there is a particular player that played EverQuest. His name is Fancy the Famous Bard. He was on the good team's side, and he griefed evil because evil is bad. So people who would play evil characters, he would run around and annoy in a really frustrating way, which eventually caused the makers of EverQuest to change the rules of the server so that bad people could kill him, whereas previously they weren't allowed, they weren't able to.
What did he do?
So there was this thing, there was this mechanic in EverQuest where if you were close to a monster, it became aggressive and attacked you.
Yeah.
So he had a low-level character that was able to run really fast and
I've heard of him.
Would run around and then run over the top of evil people, and then the monsters would detach from him and then kill them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, oh yeah, and the catch was that the server was a no-rules server, aside from, that is a slave, so you can't complain to GMs about player misbehavior. Aside from, there was a built-in protection for players so that if they're like level 4 or below, so very low level, they can't be killed by higher level players. And so he just sat on the cusp of that, yet is still able to use his ability to go around and reach people who are much higher level. And it was pretty great. And he did it all totally in character as well, which is what makes it super good.
Is that me?
Okay.
I think of Portal when they ask you to euthanize your portal.
You have to burn up the cube.
Yeah. You don't want to, and they make you, and you try to like leave without it for a few times, and you try to break the machine, and it doesn't work. It's very sad.
I thought of Jason Rohrer's Sleep is Dead. It's a more of like a storytelling tool where you have one player can control like the 2D world,
mm-hmm.
and then you have one player who is the player, and they can interact with it.
Oh.
And each player has like 30 seconds to make some kind of action, and then you make a story going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is you can play online with people, and like the controller character will, or player will have some kind of story that they want to tell, and so it's up to the player whether or not they want to go along with the story and act like a character in their world, or like try and break the story.
Okay, what's the name of it again?
Sleep is dead.
I was looking at it again recently. I forgot what it's called.
So actually, that's more griefing, you say?
Kinda.
Okay.
Is that by the same person as Passage?
Yes.
Okay.
In Ocarina of Time, there's the treasure box gambling game.
Oh,
you can actually
yeah.
cheat if you use the Lens of Truth.
That's
so
right.
Through boxes. So it's a built-in mechanic, but that it sort of allows you to cheat.
You just got to do that legit.
Yeah, you can. But you can get money easily anyway, so it's not like a...
I did that box. I did that completely legit. Just on the chip went like.
Lucky man.
Mm. So in SIP quarters of pretty much every SIP there's some sort of slavery mechanic. But I guess in SIP Wars example I know. Many players don't seem to mind the fact that we would all consider that slavery is ethically wrong, but in game it's actually affectionately called whipping. And it's considered a very efficient way of converting food into hammers.
What's it called?
Whipping.
Whipping.
You whip, and then you units magically appear.
Okay, so it's efficient, but it's
slavery. But you, you use granaries to offset the population loss, and if you spam farms, it becomes a very effective way to produce, especially in hell for your
really needs to exploit a lot of people out.
Anywho.
So in Sims, my friend used to do this all the time. You can just like kill off your characters by like, putting them in a lot of like the pool and then
talking
out the water.
But you have to watch them flail around and die.
Yeah,
and then get tired and
Yeah, I have a few. I guess a more obscure example that kind of goes along with lines of briefing is discussions over the point of the game in communities and MMOs. Specifically, there was apparently a huge problem in an obscure mode called Skyritz, where a large community of the players was there to basically anthropomorphic RP, and a large community of the players there was there to play to win because it had a large combat economy system. And this effectively almost tore the game apart because it was such a small number of people over what should be the point of this game when mechanically so many things are bad. Also, in Calamari, you can roll up people and then even put a star. It was traumatizing.
Yeah, but they're in a giant ball of awesome. That's true.
Calamari. Well, it's not really murder.
I don't want to become
a
star.
It's simulation.
It's starification.
It's like starification.
Really
they don't suffocate on the inside of the calamari first.
It's like the Borg. Once you're in there, you know it's a better way. You're grateful.
So in Fear, there's a nail gun, and when and when you kill people with it. The game does a really good job of spectacularly nailing them to surfaces in the environment. So if you like someone jumps and then you shoot them in the shoulder, you can nail them up to the ceiling. And if you nail them multiple times, you can have them like hanging by hand and by their head and by a foot from the ceiling or something or from the wall. Anyway,
sounds awesome.
Yeah, on forums there were entire threads devoted to sharing screenshots of your most spectacular nails. Like you know, just like the absolutely most gruesome, like, you know, five nails through the eye, suspending a guy from a pole kind of thing. And anyway, and there's just a lot of debate on these threads, because most people be like, yeah, look at this picture, this one's awesome, and the game, you know, has blood splatters everywhere and all that. But every, like, third or fourth post, it'd be like, you guys are so messed up, you know, it's just like, this is wrong. and it was it's not real, you idiot, you know, like, but the fact that you like it is still real, and people would argue at, you know, at great lengths over this. I just remember chancing upon these forums and being like, is this messed up? I'm not sure.
So is it more efficient in the game to use the nail gun to kill people than other...
It's a hell of a lot more fun.
Okay.
But
it's not like the game forces you to do it if you would not want to.
No, it doesn't. You could use other guns, but at some point, you know, if you don't have enough ammo for the guns, you would switch the nail gun, I guess. And it's a good gun. Shotgun's kind of fun, too. It disintegrates people at short range.
I'd not heard
there was
the
one of a gun that turned people into skeletons.
Yes, that one was in the expansion. Yes, no, it was in the original. The sniper rifle is a rail gun that shoots a beam of electricity and turns people, vaporizes the flesh off of their bones.
Grand Theft Auto, you can get a prostitute for money, get health, and then potentially kill a prostitute and get your money back.
Yes, the hooker cheat.
Yeah. And then, like, some of the ones related to that is, like, Bioshock, where, like, you can either kill the little sisters and harvest them for, like, lots of good, or, like, lots of points, rather, or, like, save them and get a small amount of points, but, like, you feel better about yourself, which actually in the end ends up being the better way to go.
It's like you get more to save?
Yeah, because, like, you get small, like... If you kill them and harvest them, you get, like, 10 points, let's say. If you save them, you get, like, 5 points. But then after, like, 10 saves, you get, like, a bonus of, like, 100 points. So it ends up being, like, more efficient. Or not, like, more efficient in the long run to save them, more efficient in the short run to kill them.
And also, if you're going to kill them, you should kill them all.
Right.
Don't just,
yeah.
Like, knock off one.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
In Age of Empires 3, there's... when you're colonizing your colony, you have the option of exploiting the native people to help you fight.
How is this presented? Is it like exploiting
native people? No, I mean, you establish an outpost inside of their residence area, and you supposedly trade with them, but, I mean, there's nothing really there in the game. You just literally just put a house of yours inside of their colony.
Nice.
Also, Microsoft selling that for 10 cents.
Yeah.
In February 3.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Why is that? I think it was just yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I guess in Infamous, you can choose whether to be bad or good and like go around and kill the people or to help them survive in the post apocalyptic world. And I guess you can kind of do the same thing in Fallout.
Well, also, Infamous forces you more to choose. Remember Ash was playing that in our class? And she said, like, you really had to go one way or the other to get, you know, it was like, on either end of the spectrum, there were special abilities. If you stayed in the middle, you got nothing.
Yeah.
Really of note. Mm-hmm. There are certain things you can build off.
So there's also, like, in Fallout, you can gain, like, people that travel with you.
Right.
Like, based off if you're good neutral or bad.
Oh, sorry. I was gonna say in Fallout as well. Like, it's in Fallout 3, there's one particular really good example where you get trapped in like this dream world that this guy is creating for you and a bunch of other people, which you don't know that it's a dream world or at first. Like, you know it's a dream or something, but you don't know that these are real people in the dream with you. And he tells you to kill the other people in the dream in order to like let you get out because he's in complete control of it. And you can kill them and you'll get out fine, all the people will be dead. Or there's ways that aren't, like, you're not told, but there are ways to, like, just go around all of it and just get out without killing anyone.
They stole that from, I guess, in Baldur's Gate 2, there's a similar thing.
I was actually going to talk.
Which part?
When it gets
Fallout,
like,
yeah.
Extreme,
yeah.
Have to
yep.
Okay, that is after Baldur's Gate 2. I was going to Baldur's Gate 2.
I have Baldur's Gate 2 on my list.
Not you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess the first thing I'll mention is Everlast, Lives. But
it's one or two.
Yeah, just one. God of War, all of them. How? So many times you'll be fighting monsters and all of a sudden a bunch of civilians come by and you can just let them go, but there's no fun that if you kill them you get life and experience, so it's
better to reward you for killing them.
Yeah.
But that's bizarre.
You get some life back.
Maybe some XP.
Is there any reason to do that in the story?
Huh?
You're Kratos.
You're
Kratos.
You are the God of War.
Well, you become the God, but pretty much you just go around killing hackers and slashing everything up.
So you get, these are just civilians who are doing nothing.
Yeah, they're just running for their lives from scary monsters, and then you come and just like hack them all into pieces. Well, also there's in the game there's like in the second one, in order to pass on you have to translate something, and in translated you get a priest, you smash your head to it, and then they say they have to sacrifice it in blood, so you just smash them into pieces until they have the blood sacrifice. Yeah.
This feels so good.
Do you have to do that? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
In Indigo Prophecy, you switch between different sets of characters. One of them is a guy who committed a murder, and then you switch to the cops who are trying to catch him. And so in one of the earlier scenes you play as the cops, you bring in a witness, and you're trying to make up the artist rendering of what the murderer looks like. And so you can choose whether or not to make a faithful rendering and bring the cops closer to catching him, or to make one that looks nothing like him, so you can like evade them when you play as the other guy.
Interesting. If you make it not look like you as killer,
and you just there are other clues you have to find in order to finally track him down.
Can you?
How do you win this game?
Yeah.
Oh.
Quick time events.
Yeah.
Press button X.
I mean, is the goal to catch the killer for the killer to get away, or is?
Well, it's actually an adventure game, so the goal is to complete the story.
Let's do quick.
Push the story along.
Yeah.
Okay. Philip.
So in the LARP that I played a long time ago, I was allowed to draw one item from the location every hour. The game ran from noon to midnight on three different days. But I couldn't play before 2 p.m. So I come in at 2 p.m. How many items was I allowed to draw at the when I came into the game, given that I've already missed 2 hours of game? And what happens, and if the answer is, well, I can make that up, And what happens if I miss an hour or halfway through, and if I forget? No one's looking. This is a box.
What did you do?
What did I do?
Yes.
What did I do? I think I drew more than one item at the beginning of the game. And I made sure I never forgot. So, honor system. A lot of LARPs are based on honor system.
So in Final Fantasy VII, like a lot of Japanese RPGs, you get used to the idea of walking into people's houses and just leaving any items you find. Except in FF7, they actually mix it up a couple times. There are a couple instances where you go in there and do that, and the item is fairly insignificant. Like, you could buy it easily, like a couple pieces of gold or gil or whatever it is. And then the person walks out of their kitchen or something, and it's like, did you just take my item? And you have the option of saying yes or no. And if you say no, then you get to keep it. But if you say yes, they're like, what the hell? Give it back.
Nice.
That was interesting.
Yeah.
I have something that hasn't really been touched on.
Okay.
So when you're running a very large scale guild in an MMO, you reach a point where you need to distribute loot from these high-end rating things. Like, the kind of community optimal thing to do is for the people who are in charge of the guild to allocate who gets what, so that you can, for instance, like, kit out the characters that it's most important for the guild to have full gear to progress. But for the most part, actual members of the guild don't really like that, because you kind of would like to receive some kind of reward for having put in time for the guild, and going a long time without ever having gotten anything is really frustrating. So people come up with these intricate systems for DKP, for distributing guild resources, essentially, that try to balance the interests of the individual and the interests of the community.
How many of you are unsure what DKP is? Dragon kill points. There are these sometimes elaborate schemes for, if you participate in these raids, you get so many points. And the idea is, like, the guild claims everything that drops, supposedly, and you build up points. And at some point, you have enough to buy, you know, a certain item. So, like, let's say you're on a raid and you just got something really cool last time, and something drops this time that you could really use, even though you're there, you don't necessarily get it because you just spent all your DK points last time. And there's lots of guild drama over how these DK points.
Primary source of guild drama.
So they people play them. There are people playing them.
Yeah.
You earn them by going on raids and then cash them in for prizes.
Mm-hmm. And there are blackout days.
So running one of these things is actually surprisingly complicated and hard. So my little experience, I ran a guild which incorporated this. One problem that happens is that if you have fixed prices for things, then you kind of get DKP inflation as prices change, and what happens, and it's incredibly complicated to work out, and you've got to reprice everything constantly. So instead, we went for an auction-based system where people kind of bid on things, and then prices correct themselves. However, people can collude in auctions, which then causes resentment in people who aren't in on the collusion, and the whole thing is just a nightmare. And now I don't run a guild anymore. I'm really happy.
Okay.
In games like Pokemon or Animal Crossing, you can decide whether or not to change the time on your DS or GameCube. Like, when Pokemon Gold and Silver came out, I was like 10, I had a bedtime, I didn't have a lot of time to catch all the nighttime Pokemon.
You can do that too, manipulate the RNG and get the stats you want. Perfect.
There's also the times whenever you do the random number generator hacks in games, in order to get a certain drop that's normally like 4%, but you can increase it up to like almost 100. But what I was going to say was Fallout 3. So in Fallout 3, you can pickpocket people. And something you do when you pickpocket, as long as you don't get caught, you can take a grenade from your inventory and place it in their pocket. And all of a sudden, they'll be like, oh my god, this grenade, run away, and it will blow up inside their pocket, and they will blow up.
What game?
Fallout 3. And the funny thing is, that's actually an achievement, to blow someone up.
Do you get, other than the joy and giggles and the...
Well, you can also, you get, you'll, you, aside from the joy and giggles,
you get the
you can,
stuff?
Well, yeah, you can pick their pockets, you can, whatever they have in their pocket you can get.
That is still left.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, you take it out as you're putting the grenade in.
You wouldn't want that loot to be damaged by the grenade.
You just put the grenade after.
So you're just hiding the evidence.
Yeah, you're just putting them in at the same time.
Simultaneous rebellion.
And it can be...
I'll trade you
all. It can be pretty cool. Because they just start very much... Ah.
Are there any other kind of representative examples we haven't touched on?
I used to play a lot of Ultima Online, and they had a bunch of really sophisticated rules that applied in certain situations and didn't apply in situations. So, there were a lot of times in the game you just flat out lie to people and have them go into situations that were unsafe for them. For example, if people were in your house, in an early version of the game, if people are inside of your house, they're automatically flagged as like attackable by you because they're in your house and you might not have let them in. And they can like run outside their house and they'll be unattackable by you. But you can also like put a trash barrel in front of your door, which only you can destroy and nobody else can destroy, and they can't run through that. So you would like invite them in to like trade them something or join your guild. And they're in your house, and then you put a trash barrel there so they can never leave, and you just kill them.
or just leave them there. Right?
Or just leave them there. There are tons and tons of ways.
So cool, this stuff.
It's it's really bad. It's really bad. I was part of the guild that did this to me, and then like. I told them that I had killed other things. I was like 10, it's pretty sick. And I put a bunch of ways to like steal tons and tons of money from people when they didn't realize I could do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I feel like just blatantly lying to people as a tactic instead of just being mean to them.
Okay. Yeah.
The question of real world money for in-game items, especially in competitive games. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it's allowed by the GMs?
Well,
I mean, those are two different questions. One is an ethical question from a player standpoint, and the other is what does it mean in terms of the player character relation in the game?
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say one thing that comes up, that, especially in board games that have a lot of positive feedback, it's called king making. And, good examples are like in Monopoly or Settlers or Munchkin. And how it works is like, let's say, you know, you and Owen and I are playing Settlers, and typically what will happen is, say, Owen is winning, but I'm typically really far behind, or someone is going to be in a position where they have no chance of winning. So hypothetically, like, he's winning, you're close second, and I'm distant third. What people do is say, hey, Mia, I will give you everything for your one little card, and then you can win, because I'm mad at Owen. Right. And that comes up, like you said, in Monopoly, and there's this question of, like, is that a really jerky thing to do? Mm-hmm. You know, the rules don't disallow it. That's kind of an ongoing debate.
Yeah.
Yes, it is a jerk.
I'll do that all the time. Similarly, in Monopoly, doing things rules don't specifically allow, like, if I have 2-1, just need to have 2 as an average, we'll, like, exchange them and promise each other immunity on our properties, or, like, something that you're not allowed to actually promise each other. Or if you just have 2 reds and I have a red, I'll give it to you, and you promise me half the profits or something like that. Where clearly the third person is now shut out of the game and can't win because we have an early advantage, even though we're, like, agreeing with things that aren't explicitly allowed by the rules.
Maybe you play Dragon Age.
We'll see. I've seen it play.
Okay. I'm playing through it right now. So I've been thinking about these issues a lot. Actually, on my first playthrough, there's like a scene where there's a kid possessed by a demon. You have the choice whether to kill him or not. The first time I killed him, and I thought everybody did. I had no compunction about it. I was just like, yeah, he's a demon, he needs to die. Turns out everybody really hated that, you know, all the other characters. My companions, and this playtime through, I was like, ah, that's right. And it was like all this extra work involved. And but it seems like in the game, whether you want to do the good thing or not, it generally works to your advantage to do the good thing because you get like more stuff, either better approval ratings from your companions who then like unlock bonuses, or you get stuff. Whereas, you know, being the jerk.
Kind of depends on who your companions are.
Yeah.
Does it? Who approves?
People like the elven assassin, I can't remember what his name
is. Oh, Zephyr.
Unfortunately, Morgana approves as well, but she likes all the jerky things.
Okay. I didn't have Zephyr.
first playthrough. That's what I think there.
Also, that one guy, the berserker guy, that you can find.
No,
another guy. I think you can get him on your team at least. He's in the temple where there's that big dragon, and where you're like doing some ash quests or something. And like he wants you to pour dragon blood on the ashes or something. I'm pretty sure you can get him on your team. Am I right or am I wrong? But I know you can get them as part of your final army, and
okay.
They're pretty good. And they're bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just chose poorly for the companions. Like the moralistic ones. Like kill a kid. Okay. In the reading that you did, Seacart talks about, you know, different choices and the way that game designers are putting these together. And he talks about two different categories, the open and the closed ethical systems. And the open was, you know, more letting players kind of determine for themselves the stance that they want to take and kind of seeing how that goes through, whereas the closed is the system kind of, you know, forces a particular way of playing upon you. And so, just kind of going through these here, where do you see them falling in terms of closed and open?
Wait, I'm confused what closed means. So you said open means that you have the decision, like, on how to value your actions and what to do.
Both. Well, like he says, for example, you know, The Sims with drowning. He mentions The Sims is an open game where you can do what you want and kind of think about what happens.
I have a definite closed example. It's not up to there. There might be a closed example up there. I'm just missing. But in the first Modern Warfare game, they have a flashback sequence where you have to snipe the future bad guy, Imran Zakayev. Mm-hmm. And even though in the game story he survives your attempt to kill him, if you don't actually hit him with the bullet, the game won't let you progress. So you have to go and basically snipe this dude no matter what. The game won't let you do it, and that's just part of the story. That's how it works. And it's dubiously moral that you should be meddling with such affairs, but, you know. And it actually comes back to bite you later in the game because, well, you're at the place where it's causing problems for you, the fact that you tried to snipe this guy. And then they actually play the flashback in which you have to do it. And it's all directed, you know, you need to actually close this.
Yeah.
Isn't like the Q murder close as well? Because like you don't have a choice. Like that you have to kill him to move on.
The what?
The Q murder, like in.
Oh, the
Q.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Q. Yeah, that would be close because you you simply can't move on and you just have to deal with your.
But that's the joke.
Well, yeah, no, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Starification is pretty closed.
Yeah. You feel bad about those people, you just can't play Katamari. I'm sorry.
I have a question, actually, about probably with regards to like, the Steepest Death briefing. It seems to me that was intended by design. There's a Steepest Death briefing, briefing directly under Cube Murder. Like the idea that I'm a GM, you're a player, and part of the challenge of the GM is not knowing whether your player is going to play along with you. But that's part of the game. So I don't know if that's something that feels like open. That tension is intended.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Well, I mean,
it's still open, right?
I would say this one is open, I guess.
Okay.
Because you are allowed to do what you want.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the example he gives for closed-ended is one of them is Manhunt. Where you have to kill people, and you know the more grisly you kill them, the better. And so, like, if you don't like it, you know, there's just no way to get through the game. And the other example he also gives is Shadow of the Colossus,
mm-hmm.
and that one especially, where it's sort of not really—it's ambiguous in terms of like, okay, I have to kill these things, and you know, if you play through, you realize like, well, wait a minute—they're just sort of hanging out. They're not really doing anything necessarily bad, but I have to keep killing them anyhow. And you can start to feel sort of guilty, but it's what you have to do to play the game. So you would say that's a closed system.
Gotcha.
So,
I would almost say Indigo Prophecy might be closed, because you have to go on with the story, which in order, well, you have to make decisions,
mm-hmm.
such in order to go progress on. I feel like. Is that right?
I think the idea is that close would be you don't make decisions. Close is like if you want to play the game, you have to make this moral decision. You don't have a choice in the moral decision. You have to be evil or like, and that's one thing. And another game could be you have to be good. But if you have the decision between both paths, then that's open, I believe, right?
Premise behind Indigo Prophecy was that like you could choose to do any action and the game would just have a different ending as a result. But I think in practice it only had a few endings, but the premise was sort of that it would have like countless endings depending on your actions. But
pretty sure that Age of Empires 3 is going to have some closed native exploitation because for the campaigns at least, I'm pretty sure there are conditions for completing a scenario.
Which
you have
to do things.
Pretty
sure there is.
Okay. Yeah. The hooker sheet is open. GTA is open.
Yeah.
Most of the rest are open.
Yeah, follow through is definitely open.
The Western style one.
The fear nail gun is actually...
The nail gun is what?
I don't know anyone who's gotten through fear without killing someone with a nail gun at some point.
But is that...
I'm wondering if it actually, you can run out of ammo and everything else.
Yeah. Can you punch things?
Yeah, you can. Yeah.
You can't run out of ammo.
You can actually kung fu kick things, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
In slow mo.
I don't say all the rest of them seem open.
Pretty open, yeah.
Actually, one of my favorite things in the future is just love the kung fu kicking people.
You don't have to do this at any point, do you?
No.
Okay. But in case, yeah. Okay, so most of these, what did we say about it?
Open.
Okay.
So,
regarding Bioshock, would that be open or closed?
Oh, it's definitely open.
I mean, you have a choice, but it's in your best interest to do one or the other.
Mm-hmm. Well, is it really open or the opposite of the choice? So if you have only one thing you can do, it's clearly closed. If you have only two things you can do that are very clearly defined, is it really an open system, or is it just a closed system with two paths?
I was getting the impression this was arguing with the closed.
Yeah.
Because you weren't self-valuing the system, was determining...
Yeah.
Whether what we're doing is good or bad.
I was thinking this was closed. So I thought Infamous, the good or evil routes would also be closed.
Mm.
I was also
if the system, some of them, I think there's a difference between only having one option and the system telling you which option is the right option. So in that case, some of these turn from open to closed. Like Bioshock would then be closed. Like Fallout 3, the Dreamland would then be closed.
Isn't telling you which was the right option the morally acceptable option?
Yeah.
What do you think? Do you think he's saying? I know what you're saying because he also mentioned Knights of the Old Republic as a closed option.
Mm-hmm.
is it that there are two discrete, like good or evil, the lights, the Jedi, or the path. Is Fallout that concrete? Fallout 3? I mean, I know Infamous is. You're either going one way or the other. But I'm not as sure, and I'm just asking people who played it, is Fallout 3 that particular in how it's kind of, is it setting up a dichotomy of the good character versus evil, or is it much...
It's much more of a gradient.
In Baldur's Gate, it's weird because there's two things. There's your alignment, which you pick at the beginning of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Really D&D style that is just fixed. But then there's this thing that's your reputation, which can be decreased if you do certain things from the game's point of view in view of others. So you can get away with doing bad stuff sometimes without actually decreasing reputation. You can also just pick a chaotic evil alignment and then do only good things, and then it's just very weird. So I don't exactly remember how the alignment really factors in the gameplay. But there's a moment, for example, in the game, there's a big story fork that sort of rejoins that afterwards, but you have to ally yourself to either the Thieves Guild or the vampires in a town who are sort of competing factions. So if you had the thieves against the vampires. Because the thieves against the vampires, you got to pick one to help you raid a certain area. And you don't really have other choices, and there's not one doesn't make you gooder or eviler. They're both kind of bad, but you have to do it to kind of find the person that you're trying to get. That's kind of closed.
Yeah.
So in terms of Baldur's Gate 2, I would say one, there's like the reputation stat, which I found never really in the battery, which is some type of metric for your.
That's not true.
If you kill everyone, then you have to go and start attacking them. It doesn't do that. Anyway,
people in your party can duel you for your honor if they get upset at you. Keldorn dueled me, left my party, and then tried to attack me because I was too evil.
Anyway, so that's like very, very specific actions that will affect your alignment, and there aren't very many of those. In addition, you have kind of like these scene head decisions, which are also very black or white, good or evil, but I would say there's a lot of decisions in the game that don't impact both of those, that have both an ethical choice, but not nearly as much of a mechanical impact.
One of the things he also mentions in relation to the open system, like going back to The Sims, is that you can do what you want and the game doesn't necessarily punish you. You know, like you can murder, you know, you can drown your Sims, and the rest of the Sims in the house don't like move away in fear or, you know, like disapprove of your action. It's just sort of up to you, like whether you want to feel bad about it or not, or you know, the game has no larger response other than why the Sim die once because I let him set the stove on fire and I foolishly rolled for his life and got a zombie back. Turns out the only way zombies happen in the game is if you make somebody else unhappy. So then I had to kill the zombie. But, So that was another kind of element to it. One of the things that he talks about in general in relation to all of this, and a lot of these kind of fit, is like ethics through statistics. You know, like that somehow ethical systems are on this point or sliding scale, and that, you know, you're heading towards good or you're heading towards evil. And we were even mentioning this before class started, that, you know, you can blow up an entire town, but then if, you know, like you give like three beggars 50 cents each, suddenly, you know, you're back at neutral because of the way that these sliding systems work, you know, in bizarrely mechanical ways.
Yeah, you can buy a reputation back by donating to temples.
It's like indulgences.
Yeah, it is exactly like indulgences. That's high number one.
I have to close this now because I'm getting high off of the microphones. I wanted to show you an example of one that we haven't talked about yet. Somebody mentioned Call of Duty. This is actually from last year. It's not Castro, which is the new one, but...
So is it the Russian hostage thing?
Yeah. It's the no Russian level. From Modern Warfare 2?
It's like a competition.
This is, so this was last year's Modern Call of Duty. And this was the optional level. You did not have to play it. And of course, it caused a big storm when it was released. I'm just going to play it, and then we can talk about it after. So, has anyone played this?
Yeah.
Want to provide a little context or explain
the
a little bit more?
So the convoluted plot is that this is a false flag attack, which is staged by a terrorist organization, which is meant to frame the CIA to start a war between Russia and the US. And so the idea here is that you are playing a character who is undercover, was part of the CIA, who was part of this terrorist organization. And then you would end up being double-crossed because they, as it was just revealed at the end, they knew that you were a CIA agent and they're trying to pin the attack on America. So that's
did you have the
story
of,
context.
Did you have the option of shooting Makarov in the back? Or?
I don't believe so. If you try and shoot Makarov, then the level ends with a fail and can't progress in the game. If you try and get through the level without shooting any civilians, the level also ends. Makarov decides that you're a traitor and shoots you before doing anything else.
Before he's supposed to shoot you later.
Before he's supposed to shoot you. I seem to remember.
I think you can get through the mission by not shooting any civilians, but you can't get through without shooting any of the cops.
Yeah, like something
wrong. If you don't shoot the cops, I think you can, you know.
Yeah, so sure, probably you don't have to shoot civilians.
Yes.
There's just
There might be a different difficulty settings as well.
Yeah. Also, that guy was incredibly diligent about killing civilians.
Yeah, man.
I was impressed. I did not play that level that way.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, that was that guy took his work to heart. Like,
yeah.
I don't think that I would have like Owen says, if I was, I mean, haven't played Modern Warfare 2 yet, but or Black Ops for that matter. But don't feel like it would come to me that it was really necessary to just hunt down every last.
He's thorough. He's very thorough.
Yeah, blend in.
And but you know, it's also interesting that you're the dupe. In this, right? You think, well, I'm killing all of these people, and
so that I can then kill him, probably, or something.
Right,
like
or
that.
For, it's for a greater good, right? That you know, I'm gonna get in with this group and help bring down this terrorist cell, whereas, not so much. And I mean, Call of Duty. Like, has anyone played Black Ops? There's the scene in it, another level where you can assassinate Castro, and. I was just watching it
off Castro
this morning, and
is it? They
yeah, the Russian Cuba objected to the video game, but I watched that level. It's not nearly as exciting as this one, although it's interesting in that you infiltrate his compound. You know, you get up to he's like in his bedroom with his lover, whatever she is, and you shoot him, and in this. Clip, the guy shot him in the head, and it slows down to bullet time, actually, and you see it enter his forehead, and he falls over, and then the enraged lover grabs the machine gun and starts firing at you in her negligee, so you have to kill her, too. And yeah, Cuba is outraged, but I don't think it takes a lot to get Cuba mad at the United States anyway.
Can you score now? Statistics. Don't like statistics.
Mm-hmm. 485 likes, 85 dislikes.
Oh. It's pretty high for dislikes.
Yeah.
Maybe for something that's not like glitching me, but glitching video. In the previous Modern Warfare game, there's actually. I haven't seen anyone draw this parallel, but there is a level where you are in the middle of a firefight, a US Marine in some Middle Eastern war zone. And you're told to shoot at enemies who are coming onto your center, but they're at such a range that you cannot tell from above. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely certain that whatever you're shooting at, there's a 50% chance that there's actually one of your allies.
There's also the really creepy.
That's the gunship sequence.
The gunship sequence,
which gets most of the attention. I was surprised by the subtlety of the sequence where you're just in the middle of a firefight in Modern Warfare 1, because it has that situation of you are being told to kill, but you may not, even though everyone on that you might be shooting at is a combatant, you may not want to shoot everyone in the space, you know, they may be a, right? I felt that actually made a more interesting subtle point of actually that's kind of what the situation of being in the Middle East right now is like, it's hard to tell from your phone.
Yeah. I was thinking about this because I actually I did an interview last week or 2 weeks ago with some radio people, and it was about Black Ops being released because it's like the best selling entertainment media ever. And they introduced it, of course, on the segment as the ultra violent video game called Call of Duty.
That's pretty accurate.
It is, but it's and one of the questions that they asked, that each affiliate asked over and over, is, you know, they mentioned the Castro level. They said, the video game's gone too far. You know, is there a line that shouldn't be crossed? And I'm sure if they had, I mean, none of these people actually played video games, so you know, they were just reading their script. This might have even fit even better. You know, in terms of
this is
question.
Pretty. I'm surprised this got through.
Well, it's an optional level.
Right.
You know, you don't have to do it. Interesting comment right there. You know,
yeah.
From JFK Airport and U.S. citizens. But you know, leaving aside the knee-jerk kind of gamer defense, well, it's just for fun or it's just a video game. I mean, how do you answer that question? I mean, I know what I dispute to them, but I'm just curious in terms of like what does it mean, and beyond just like games as like statistics for like the good or the dark side, you know, is there a point you think where it can go too far with the game? What's the assumption behind that question?
There's a really disturbing news report I was reading about this Japanese game called Replay.
Oh yeah.
And the disturbing, for me, it was clear, like, this is totally messed up, can't believe that this is, like, this exists. But the part that was disturbing was the defense put forth by the developers. And they were saying, who are you guys to be telling us this is messed up? You Americans, you make games all the time, which you have to kill people. Murder is a much worse crime than rape. Our game is not nearly as bad as, for say, this. And I was just like, wait, no, but that's more messed up, but what? And I don't know what to think of it. What?
The South Park episode that addresses the South Park levels. I've
not seen that South Park.
Actually, just on that game in particular, there was a lot of backlash I heard in Japan about Replay, mainly because the game had been out for maybe 2 years and gone completely unnoticed until basically the West heard about it, America and Europe, because I think it showed up on like Amazon.com or something at some point. And of course, there was a gigantic controversy. The media blew it up completely. And so then in Japan, I think it was banned in Japan, I think?
No.
No.
So something of the like Japanese that, politicians
but it had been
started
out
like
for a while, like they would have paid attention all the
apparently,
time.
Apparently, like Japanese politicians started cracking down on these types of games, and a lot of fans got like really angry, and they said, "Well, this is just like your Western, your Eurocentric view, and it's like, and why is this backlashing onto us?" Kind of thing. But
the only reason why there was a backlash was because of political attention, not necessarily because of moral.
I mean, a lot of our moral framework is sort of Judeo-Christian in nature. And I read an entire Wikipedia article on such things afterwards. Child pornography, as long as it doesn't actually use child actors, so like representations, animated 3D, whatever, is not illegal in Japan. And there's no real political pressure either to make it illegal. It's just not part of the public consciousness that something that needs to be made illegal. And the point is not a weird point, like completely crazy that you know killing people is probably the worst crime, and you know, and the West makes games that advocate that all the time.
So the question of
whether or not in the radio interview with that answer.
In terms of like the question of whether or not a game crosses the line, first assumes that there is a line to be crossed, and.
Yeah.
I guess my answer would be yes, there is a line, but that line is basically whether or not people buy the game. If people buy the game hasn't really crossed the line.
So, Dennis' image reminds me of, like the video reminds me of, remember the game of 9/11, where you are a person on one of the top floors.
Oh, you can jump.
Yeah,
you
well, that's the only way to end the game. Yeah. You can go any way you want, but there's no escape. And so the only way to end the game is to jump out a window. And
that had the same response,
yeah.
I think. Yeah.
I was just going to say, back on the point of, like, is there a line or not, I think the line is not a line on whether, like, it becomes okay or not. It's a line between, I know we mentioned this before, but, like, between, like, pornography and art. Like there's a line, like, if you're, you know, there's ways to, like, take pictures of, like, naked human bodies,
right.
And, like, it's artful, like, people respect it and all that. And like there's ways in games to represent killing and rape and all that kind of stuff in a way that provides a message within this framework that makes it okay. And there's games where, like, you know, I think Manhunt was one of these where it's like there's no real like point other than just like displaying just terrible images for the sake of displaying them. And like in my mind it's very, very similar to like the discussion of like is that image like pornography or art.
And so I think that's the right way to go with this kind of thing in particular. Like, I feel that there's this question of, like, is it doing anything meaningful in the game other than just being gratuitous?
What?
And in this case, it's definitely yes. Like, it progresses the plot, kind of makes you think, I guess, a bit about the characters that are involved. Like there's character development of Markov, of Makarov here. It's showing the shady dealings of the CIA and all this kind of business. So like, it's also making a political statement at the same time. It's not just nailing people's eyes to the ceiling with a nail gun or what have you.
I definitely feel like there. I was thinking, like, are there any games that are over the line? I can definitely imagine a game that would be over the line. Like, you can imagine if, like, in Rape Lair, whatever it's called, there were, like, a customizable character thing and you were advertised as, like, rape your neighbors or something like that. Like, that, I would be uncomfortable with something like that. So I feel like, I almost wanted to say that there is no line and just make people buy it, but I feel like there are some things where, like, they would be over the line regardless of whether people buy them or not.
People might even buy them because they are over this line.
Well, yeah, of course. That's why you would buy that.
What about, how many of you have played or seen Super Combine Massacre RPG? How many of you have heard of it?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, does that game cross a line?
Can somebody describe this?
Yeah. I mean, I get the idea from the title.
Someone
want to?
Tennis. It's kind of a Super Nintendo era styled RPG. It has you walking around in a sort of Final Fantasy Nintendo era kind of graphics with quotes and dialogue that have been collected from the item news reports diaries and stuff like that. And it is largely about the events leading up to and the massacre itself. And yes, you do go around, and I can't remember when you actually.
You do everything.
Yeah, you shoot everybody. Right?
You have to plant. You have to sneak into the school. I forget which one you start off as, either Dylan Flegel or Harris, but. You pick up your friend. It's very RPG-ish in the beginning, where you're in your room because you touch objects and it gives flashbacks to like your friendship with this guy, like learning how to make pipe bombs behind the convenience store. And you pick him up. You go to the school. You have to sneak in and plant some bombs. And after those go off, then you move through the school and you're shooting. And it's interesting. Brian fired this 5 times now, but I showed it to a class once in Ohio, my old school, and. I'm like sneaking into the school, right? And there are security cameras you have to avoid, and students who can't be seen by them either. And there's a point where, you know, I'm trying to manipulate the character, and everyone in the class is like, oh, that way, that way, that way. Oh, you know, you blew it, you got seen, you got kicked out, you get it. And it was like this moment of like typical gaming, oh, did it. And then you realize, like, I got kicked out of the school because I was trying to plant a bomb. This was based on something that really happened. And it was that moment of, like, you were saying, with the friendly fire, and not sure who you're shooting. And it was like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, this is something that made me think about, what about all those other games where I'm happy to kill people, and I don't really think about the consequences, and this is a game where you were forced to.
So I think there's a really interesting parallel in a film that I can think of, The Battle of Algiers. I don't know if you've seen this. But so there's this scene where you're following... the insurgents, who are these two women who've managed to smuggle bombs into a cafe, which is basically just a civilian hangout, which is largely frequented by the ruling class French section of society there. And there's this incredibly tense scene where they're trying to like leave their bombs in the cafe without being detected and get out of there. And you're like, oh my god. Are they going to be able to make it? I hope that they can bomb this cafe. And you're like, what am I thinking? This is terrible. And you definitely have that same kind of tension there. Yeah.
I feel like people devote too much emotional energy into getting offended. People really pour their heart and souls into getting offended by things. And the line for me is it advocate and is it instructional? If it's not either of those two things, it doesn't affect me, really. And if you really want to go out and
play some messed up shit. It's not my none of my business. And my line is not going to be the same as your line. It's not going to be the same as someone else's line. And because there is no easily definable line, it really scares me that someone could define a line. And since I don't like that idea, I'd rather say that as long as it's not like, and then you pull back the safety, and here's how you sneak into the airport, and then here's how you shoot this, you know, as long as it's not something like that, like, and now please go do it, here's why you should, because America is evil or whatever. You know, if that would scare me, because I think that would be increasing the chance that someone shoots me up at an airport. But otherwise, because, you know, my attitudes are so liberal and someone else's attitudes might be so conservative, and oh God, someone else's attitudes might be even more liberal than mine and be okay with things that I wouldn't feel comfortable with. If I was allowed to draw a line, someone else could draw it somewhere, you know, either before or after, and that would just mess everything up. And so, you know, that's how I kind of feel about it. And I think that the environment right now kind of tends towards that.
The line drawing?
Tends
towards line drawing?
Yeah. People in general are not, people who make games are not intrinsically, on average, really messed up, and so tend to make stuff that they feel generally comfortable with. And those who are messed up, you just draw attention to them, really, by giving them publicity anyway. But for every person who says that you know, what game, like, Diablo 2 got an M rating because of violence. Now if you look at it today, it's like little sprites whacking at each other, you know? But that was the line back then. And if that's the line today, then this stuff is just absolutely horrendous and should not be disseminated. I think it should be, and someone else might think that what I think is okay is not okay, and it's just going to be what I think is not okay is okay. It's very complicated.
This guy got death threats.
Yeah.
For releasing this game.
I strongly like to agree with a lot of effort being put into the line drawing. And especially the public discussion, the public display of I am drawing the line here, mostly by politicians, but
yes,
also people with some sort of possibly often self-interested agenda. You know, it's like points that both by the game industry and by people who are outside the game industry. It seems like there's more effort either being used to figure out what is offensive and what is not offensive, than to possibly to discuss the need that some things should be able to offend. That we should have stuff that needs to exist, or then because it's a right to actually figure out what that line is. It's like then there needs to be some stuff that crosses, because maybe the line is, you can't draw that.
And it's a meant to desensitize adults to violence. There's so much violence these days. It'd be better if you didn't freak out at every little instance.
I think it's totally okay to be freaked out at things. I think that you should definitely say when you're offended by something. And I think that should be open to debate, like whether something is like a decent artistic expression or...
But I don't think...
I mean, like, so there's a difference between stating that you find something offensive and attempting to have these things banned or
exactly,
whatever, right?
Yeah,
so
I agree.
I'm totally fine with people wasting words on saying whether it's like...
No, clearly. But as long as because you are offended you think I shouldn't be able to look at it, that's the problem.
Okay. I think that's the idea.
Or even better, if by being offended you get to now make your point. You know, it's like, you know, this is why this offends me, and these are my reasons for it. Mm-hmm. Might be more informative and actually better for society to get those mm-hmm. ideas in the out into the open.
People also get offended by proxy. Mm-hmm. This doesn't offend me, but I can see how it would offend
children.
Well, and people are, I think there's also a conflation of taking offense and discomfort, because, you know, playing these games might be uncomfortable, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. You know, if it makes you think about, like, what Ellen is saying, or like this game, is Super Combine Massacre, if it makes you think about things in a different way, or like that film. I mean, and especially games have the ability to kind of provoke that in you, to make you think, because you're the one, especially these games that force you to do certain things. It's like, well, and I mean, think about, is there a game that you absolutely refuse to play because, you know, there was something in it that you just really did not want to do?
That's fine, but
yeah, I think we'll end there.